Today we begin here with the two dots on the top of Nun Hey of Nalev. Gemara here is discussing Rabbi Meir's position in the Mishnah, where Rabbi Meir Omer, Hayardain Mafsik, the Maaser Be'ema, that the Yardain creates some sort of division when it comes to Maaser Be'ema. Earlier on the Mishnah we saw that any flock or animals that were within 16 mil of each other are considered to be a single entity, a single corral for Maaser Be'ema. Rabbi Meir seems to be saying that no matter how close they are, if the Yardain is a dividing point, that makes it as if they were two corrals or two separate entities. Amar Rabbi Ami, lo shanu ala she'en sham gesher. That's only if there's no bridge there. Vayesham gesher, gesher mitzarfan. If there is a bridge there, the bridge is the problem. Alma mishum delo mikarvan hu. The reason that the Yardain makes it that they're considered to be separate entities is because they're not near each other. That creates a division by which the animals are not considered to be close together because they can't cross. It's not easy to bring them together. Therefore, they're considered to be separate. But if you have a bridge there, it bridges the gap between them and the animals can cross back and forth, or it's easy to bring the animals together. Meitave, is that really the case? Hayulo bishnei evrei yardain, elech veelech. He has animals on both sides of the yardain. O bishnei avtaliot. Or in two different domains, Gamon shall Namer v'Namuri, in the places called Namer v'Namuri, which obviously were locations that were adjacent to each other. They're found northeast of Yericho on the eastern side of the Yardain, these locations. Ein mitzarfim. They do not join together. They cannot be aggregated. Ve'ein tzarech lamar. And certainly you don't have to say chutz laaretz v'aretz. When it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael. So now, what the Braita does is indicates that there are a number of dividing lines for Maaser Be'ema. The one that we're discussing is the Eber Yardain. It says over here that if he was on two sides of the Yardain, it splits it. And that would be similar to the view of Rabbi Meir, that the Yardain is a dividing point. Avtaliot, as Rashi says over here, are two different areas, regions. They're in a single country, according to Rashi, but they have a certain amount of autonomy, or they're under different governorships, where the Rabbeinu Gershom says that they're two large cities. But basically, it is a political boundary, not a geographical boundary. The Yardain and the Braita represents a topographical division, and that creates a division for Maaser Be'ema. And then the Braita mentions that Avtaliot, political boundaries, even though they're not geographically or topographically divided, nevertheless, they create a division as well because there isn't a free flow between them. And you don't have to mention the fact that Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael are also considered to be a dividing line. So now, Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael, again, aren't necessarily a geographical or topographical division. And you could probably walk from one to the other in many places where there's no real dividing line. Va'chutz la'aretz va'aretz k'makom she'esh gesher dami. And therefore, they're similar to a location that has a bridge in it. Because the bridge bridged over that topographical or geographical divider like the Yardain, according to Rabbi Ami. If that's the case, then between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz should be the same thing. If it's just a border, again, a political border, here a border of Kedusha, then why is that border a dividing line if you can gain access to either side very easily? Biktani, and the Braita says, lo mitzarfim. They're unable to be joined through those borders. So it sounds like from the Braita that just being close together or not having a large distance between them is not the reason that they are considered to be divided. It is because there's literally a border there, and that border creates a division irrespective of the physical barriers or lack of physical barriers that are there. And that would be a question Rabbi Ami seems to say it all has to do with the physical structure or makeup of the area. And if you can gain access, then you're okay. Ella, Amar Rabbi Chirbaba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Haina Taima de Rabbi Meir. This is the reason that Rabbi Meir says that the Yardain is Mafsik. The Amar Kura, the Pasuk says in Yoshua, when it's describing the division of the land amongst the Shvatim that Yoshua breaks up the land into. Over there, in describing the border, it says in Perek Yudchet, Posuk Chaf, Vayardain, Igbol Oto Lepat Kedma, Yarden will be the eastern border. Zeret Nachalat Bnei Miyamin, the Gvulotah Saviv L'Mishpachotam. That is the border, the eastern border of Bnei Binyamin. So then, in the pasuk it says, Yarden Yigbol Oto. Akatuv Asau Gvul Bifnei Atzmo. Torah, or the pasuk, makes it into a independent border. Now that can have numerous meanings over here. In our case, it likely means that it's a divider. Irrespective of whether you can cross it or can't cross it, you can traverse it, there's a bridge or not. The Yarden is a divider. And the Torah, or really the Navi, makes it that it is an independent type of border that works irrespective of the character of the area. That's one way to look at it. Others look at it, Asog Gvul Bifnei Atzmo means that it's an independent Gvul, which means that you have Eretz Yisrael on one side, you have Eber Yarden on the other side. I'm not saying Chutz Laaretz, because it's not clear that Eber Yarden is really Chutz Laaretz. It has some sort of level of Kedusha, may not be full-fledged Chutz Laaretz, but at least it's a dividing line between the western side and the eastern side of the Yarden. But it might also mean that it's an independent area, means that it's not Eretz Yisrael, not Eber Yarden, it's the Yarden. And the Yarden is its own area, that's one way to view it. Or it could be that the Yarden is not completely in one or the other. It moves back and forth because it's not a straight line. And so therefore, if you drew a straight line, part of it would be in Eretz Yisrael, part of it would be in the Eber Yarden. That's what it means, that it's a Gvul Bifnei Atzmo. It says, Vele Yameato, if that's the case, that because it calls it a Gvul, that makes it into some sort of dividing line, then what are you going to do with the rest of that perek over there, where it describes the borders moving along between, for instance, between Binyamin and Yehuda, or the borders of Binyamin and Yehuda? And it says, V'tahara gvul, V'ala gvul, V'yarada gvul, gives you all these borders that are going along throughout the areas that they're trying to demarcate. So every time it uses it or describes it as a gvul, V'tahara gvul, V'ala gvul, Hachanami HaKetuv Aso Gvul Bifnei Atzmo, are you going to say then that the Torah, meaning the Navi, is making it into something that is an independent Gvul, like the Yarden? You're going to say that, then it's going to turn out that you're going to have every border between each Shevet is going to be a dividing line for Maaser Behema, which doesn't seem to be reasonable. And the way that Rashi says it is, if that's the case, that every Shevet's border is considered to be a border, then Im Kein Amay Nakad Chutz Laaretz Varetz. Why did the Braita even mention the distinction between Chutz Laaretz and Eretz Yisrael? It could have simply mentioned the divisions between the Shvatim. The divisions between the Shvatim, which are lesser divisions, those are considered to be Gvulin, and certainly Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz would be classified like that. It's a little bit of a difficult question that Rashi is posing, because the Braita never says Eretz and Chutz Laaretz, it says V'kol Shekein. Certainly Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz would be a divider if we say other things are a divider, like the distinctions or the differences between Shnei Avdaliot. But the maybe simpler way to read it is that if the mention of a Gvul in the Pasuk, like the Yarden, gives it status as a dividing line, then so too all the Gvulim that are mentioned here in Yoshua should be distinct or create a dividing line that should separate between the two sides of the Gvul. Gemara says, Shani Hotom, by there it's different, Amar Kra, because the pasuk says, in Parshat Maseh, Zot Tiyeh Lechem Haaretz Ligvulotah Saviv. These are the borders of Eretz Yisrael. There it's describing the entirety of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And it gives you a summary pasuk that says that these are the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Kula Eretz Yisrael, Gvula Chadhi. All of Eretz Yisrael is considered to be a single entity. Rashi says over here, Lachar Shim Man'an Kulan, after it mentions all of them, Asau Eretz Achat. It then combines them, consolidates them into a single Eretz. Tosafot doesn't love what Rashi is saying, is because it implies that the pasuk that we're quoting here is connected to the psukim that we quoted before. But the psukim that we quoted before are all from Sefer Yoshua. This is a pasuk from the Torah. So Tosafot said it has nothing to do with this being a consolidating pasuk in contrast to those psukim beforehand, because they're not from the same place. But rather, he's saying that in and of itself, that the Gvulot Eretz Yisrael make Eretz Yisrael into a single entity, which means that in Parshat Maaseh, when it describes the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and then says Zot Haaretz, that means that everything within those borders is a single entity. If everything in those borders is a single entity, then the divisions or the borders between the Shvatim are not meaningful. They're not meaningful because the Aretz, or Eretz Yisrael, is considered to be one unit. And that's described here in Parshat Maaseh. Describes the outer borders, the outer perimeter of Eretz Yisrael, and says, Zot Aretz, this is one land. This is one area. And since it's one entity, you can't subdivide the entity. Where it says, Yochei Yardein Nami. Well, then, if that's the case, then the Yardein should also be included in the Gvulot of Eretz Yisrael, and should not be considered a separate entity. Aretz velo Yardein. It says, this is the Aretz, and not the Yardein. Meaning that the Yardein is not part of Eretz Yisrael. It is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now again, what it means that it's not the Eretz Yisrael, does that mean that it's Chutz La'aretz? Does that mean that it has the status of Eber Yardein? Or does that mean it has an independent status? Could be any of those, but no matter which of those it is, it does create a division of sorts, and that's what Rabbi Meir is noting, that the Yardein is a dividing factor for Maaser Behema. If you're found on both sides of the Yardein, it is a separate entity. Gemara says, Bishlama the Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, Hainu Diktani Yardein. That's why the Yardein is mentioned. Ela Rabbi Ami, Litnehu Lukulu Na'arot. According to Rabbi Ami, why don't you mention any river? According to the explanation of Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, this is unique to the Yardein. That's because the Pasuk says, a Yardenik Boloto, that the Yardein is considered to be a independent boundary or some form of a boundary. And so it's specific or particular to the Yardein. But according to Rabbi Ami's reasoning, which is that you have a geographical, topographical division because the Yardein makes it difficult to traverse, difficult to combine the animals on both sides, then why is it unique to the Yardein? You could say this about any river. Any river that creates such a division should also be a divider for Maaser Behema. It shouldn't be unique to the Yardein. Could be that the Yardein is a very large river, it's a well-known river, but there's nothing in particular about the Yardein to differentiate it from anything else. And therefore the Gemara leaves that as a kasha. That is a difficulty for that position of Rabbi Ami. Alright, the Gemara says now, Kitanae. Now, the way that the Girsa is in other Gemaras is Lema Kitanae. Let us say this is a Machloket Tanaim. On the other hand, the way that we have it in the Girsa is Kitanae. It is like a Machloket Tanaim. This will make a difference on how you conclude what's being said here. Ki atem ovrim et Yardein, Eretz Kanan. You are now going to traverse the Yardein in order to enter Eretz Kanan. Artsa Eretz Kanan, velo Yardein, Eretz Kanan. You see that? You traverse the Yardein, then you enter into Eretz Kanan, which indicates that the land is classified as Eretz Kanan, but the Yardein itself is not classified as Eretz Kanan. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Har Yomer, Me'ever the Yardein Yericho, Kedma Mizracha. From the other side of the Yardein, where Yericho is, Kedma Mizracha, on the eastern side. Ma Yericho, Eretz Yisrael, just like Yericho is found inside of Eretz Canaan, Af Yardein, Eretz Canaan. So just like Ma Yericho, Eretz Canaan, just like Yericho is found inside of Eretz Canaan, so too the Yardein is in Eretz Canaan. So they're describing the area that was taken by Reuben, Gad, and Chatzis Shevet Menashe, and it describes it as being Me'ever the Yardein, on the other side of the Yardein. Remember, the other side of the Yardein all depends on which side of the Yardein you're standing on. But he's saying, if you're standing in Eretz Yisrael, on the Eber the Yardein, the other side of the Yardein, Yericho Kedma Mizracha, from the Yardein by Yericho on the eastern side, that's where they're taking their property. But Yericho is being described there, and it's putting Yardein and Yericho together in the same category. And clearly Yericho is part of Eretz Canaan, so too the Yardein is part of Eretz Canaan. So now you have a Machloket Tanaim as to what the status of the Yardein is. Is the status of the Yardein the same as the eastern side? Or is the status of Yardein same as the western side, or as part of Eretz Canaan? Now, it's not clear here what the Gemara is doing. Gemara could just be simply saying, Lema Kitanae, if the Yardein is considered part of Eretz Canaan, and therefore it will not be a divider. Or is the Yardein considered to be Chutz La'aretz or Eber Yardein, and therefore it is considered to be a divider? That's the way Rashi says it. That means then that their machloket is not a question on anyone here. It's simply, it is a machloket tanaim as to whether the Yarden is mafsik or not, or this position of Rabbi Meir, that the Yarden is mafsik, will depend on the views here as to what the status of the Yarden is, and it's just meshing it or explaining what we've been saying in the Gemara till now. On the other hand, there is a view here that lema ketanae is that, according to Rabbi Chir Ba'aba, who makes it sound like the Yarden is a gvul bifnei atzmo, that would mean that we're asking a question of Rabbi Chir Ba'aba. Rabbi Chir Ba'aba is making a simple statement that it is considered to be an independent border. Yet we have a machloket tanaim about it. And then you would have to say that the Gemara's conclusion over here about this machloket tanaim, which is the little oat bet in the Haggadah Bach, is kasha. It's a question. So we just left a question on Rabbi Ami before. Now we have a question on Rabbi Chir Ba'aba's position that the Yarden is an independent gvul. That's only true according to one Tana. There are other Tanaim that disagree. And therefore, Rabbi Chir Ba'aba's statement is not just a generic statement that's accepted by everybody. It is actually a machloket Tanaim. But again, if you eliminate the word lema and just say kitanae, it is a machloket Tanaim, then you don't need to say it's a kasha, because the Gemara is not necessarily asking a question. It's just clarifying that the issue of the Yarden being a dividing factor and the way that Rabbi Chir Ba'aba explains it is not muskam lakol. Now, not everybody agrees with that. There are dissenting opinions, or there are alternate Tanaim that have a differentiated opinion. Now we're going to a little bit of Agadah Torah. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana Rabbi Yochanan, in Yarden only Beit Yirecho lemato. Yarden only applies to from Beit Yirecho, sounds like from Yirecho and south. Lemay Hilchoto. Why does that make a difference? Ilei Melanoder. If it's a person who took a neder with regards to the Yarden, then Halech Achar Lashon Bnei Adam. It doesn't matter what the Torah calls the Yarden. It matters what people call the Yarden. Whatever people or the colloquial is known as the Yarden will be subject to his nether. So what the Torah calls the Yarden is irrelevant to the nether. It's what people call the Yarden. It seems to be that it's relevant for Maaser Be'ema. For Rabbi Meir's Shita, who says that the Yarden is a dividing line, it's only where it's called the Yarden. And the Yarden, according to him, is only from Yericho and south. Tanya Nami Yochi. We have a brayta that's supportive of this. Yarden Yotze Mimarat Paimius. The Yarden sources out of the cave of Paimius. Umalech B'yamashel Sibchi. It goes through the sea of Sibchi, which is probably the Chula Valley, the Chula Lake that was there prior to being drained and which they've reflooded today. U'B'yamashel Tveria. And then it goes through the Kinneret. Ubiyama shel stone, and then it goes through the Dead Sea. Ve'olech v'nofele yamagadol, and then it goes into the Great Sea, which seemingly would be the Mediterranean, which is hard to understand what that means. We know that the waters of the Yarden don't go to the Mediterranean Sea. Even if you say nofele yamagadol is the Red Sea, it seems to be since the time that Hashem destroyed Sodom v'Amorah that the waters from the Dead Sea have not gone anywhere. They don't go south to the Dead Sea. And so there would have been no waterway that went down there. It's not clear what they're describing here. But here's the piece that is supportive of it, that Yarden is only considered to be the area from Beit Yirecho Namato. Rashi explains over here that that's because in the rest of the places, the water of the Yarden mixes with other waters or with the seas that it's passing through. And since it mixes with them, it's not considered to be the Yarden because of those waters. But down by Yericho and that area, it stands independent. That's how Rashi explains that why that area is called the Yarden. Tosafot asks numerous questions on that. Anybody who's been to Eretz Yisrael and knows the area, that doesn't make so much sense because the Yarden already becomes independent once it leaves the Kinneret. Once it leaves the Kinneret, it's already independent, and it's running independently all the way down to Yericho and then into the Dead Sea. That's number one. Number two is when the Yarden starts to reach the Dead Sea from Yericho area and south, it actually starts to widen, and it isn't the narrow river. It widens out as it's dropping in the delta area where it drops into the Dead Sea. So then what's distinct or differentiated about the waters of the Yarden in that area that's different than the waters in the other areas? It's very hard to understand. including the fact that Tosfot notes that the Medrash says that the waters of the Yarden, as they pass through these other bodies of water, they remain independent, and they don't necessarily become swallowed up or batel to these other water sources, or the other water bodies. And therefore, Tosfot makes a suggestion that the area that's called the Yarden is the area that demarcates it as a border. For Shevet Yehuda, the eastern border of Shevet Yehuda is Yam HaMelech. It means from the northern end of Yam HaMelech all the way to the southern end of Yam HaMelech, that's the border of Eretz Yehuda. North of Eretz Yehuda is Eretz Binyamin. The area of Eretz Binyamin, the eastern border of Eretz Binyamin, on the southern end is the top, the northern end of the Dead Sea, which is the northern end of Yehuda. And then the north end of Binyamin is Yericho. So between Yericho and the Dead Sea is the eastern border of Shevet Binyamin. And we said before that the Yarden is Yibol Oto. The Yarden functions as a border. So the idea would be that where does the Yarden function as a border, where it has the shame of a Yarden? That's in the area between Yericho and Yam HaMelech, because that's where it demarcates the eastern end of Shevet Binyamin. That's how Tosafot deals with the issue. Again, it's a very difficult issue. Why the Yarden north of the Kinneret, north of the Chula Valley, or even between the Chula Lake and the Kinneret, where the Yarden is flowing absent any other water body, why isn't that considered to be the Yarden? And more importantly, why isn't the area between the Kinneret and Yericho considered to be the Yarden? So Tosafot says it's a technicality in the way that the borders are described, and it's giving meaning to that pasuk in Yeshua that says Igbol Oto. That Gvul is referring to the Gvul of Binyamin, and that's only between Yericho and Yam HaMelech. Probably the better explanation, and then Rashi would make a lot of sense, is there is a place called Beit Yareach, or Beit Yerach, which actually was a city or a village just south of the Kinneret. It is in the area, if those people are familiar with it, where the power station was, right south of the Kinneret, and that Beit Yerach was right there. Now, if you tell me that the Yarden is only called the Yarden, mi Beit Yerach Ulamata, and south of there, that makes a lot of sense. It's exactly what Rashi's saying. Before that, it keeps going in and out of other seas. Now it becomes this independent river that runs, and that's true. From the southern end of the Kinneret all the way down to Yam HaMelech, that would be the Yarden. So if that's what the reference is to, rather than Yericho, but rather Beit Yerach or Beit Yereach, that would then make a lot more sense, because that is the full extent of what people mostly call the Yarden, which is that area between the Kinneret and Yam HaMelech. So that would probably be an easier explanation. Now, the Braita that we brought says that the Yarden is Yotzei Mimarat Paimius, goes out of the cave of Paimius, which we're familiar today as being known as the Banyas. The Banyas is the spring or the source, or one of the sources of the Yarden. It's not exactly there. The Mayan is a little bit off from where that was, but that doesn't mean in their time it wasn't there. And that's a description of the source of the Yarden. So now, Amar Rabbi Chir Bava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lama Nikra Shmo Yarden. Why is the Yarden called the Yarden? Shiyoreid Midan. Because it comes down from the area of Dan. You'll note that right next to the Banyas is Tel Dan. Because the area that Dan settled up there was taken in Sefer Shoftim. Shevet Dan sets out a mission from the area where they are on the border of Yehuda in the areas right around here, Ben Sora Uben Eshta'ol. That's where Shevet Dan is found. And they're unable to conquer a lot of the area around here because they're at a disadvantage to the Canaanim. And it takes a long time before they conquer these areas. So in that time period in Shoftim, they sent out a reconnaissance mission up north, and they find this place, Leshem, which they conquer, and then they resettle. And Shevet Dan is really split in half. Half of it is here, in the area on the border with Yehuda. And the other half is found up by Leshem in the north. And that's when they say, Midan ad Beersheba. Dan is in the north, Beersheba is in the south. Dan is because this area of Tel Dan that they settled up in the north, it's an area where we have the excavations have palaces of the kings of Israel. That's where the Egel was placed when Yeravam put two Egalim. One Egel was found in Dan, and the other one was found in Beit El. It was Beit El in the south, Dan in the north. So now he's saying the reason it's called Yarden is because it comes from Dan. The area of the Banyas, the source of the Yarden, is right there by Dan in the north. The difficulty with that is that it's in Sefer Shoftim. And the Torah calls it Yarden, even though it has yet to be conquered by Dan. That you can either say is Hashem Atid, we have that in the Torah sometimes, that it's called based on what will be in the future, or it could be, this is the difference between what we saw before. Before we noted that the area that's called the Yarden, according to the Torah, is me Beit Yericho Ulamata. From either Yericho or Beit Yerech Ulamata, that's called the Yarden. That's the Torah's Yarden. How come we call the Yarden from even further north? So that's what's being described here, because Yarad Midan. Once Dan conquered that area up there, the name of Yarden was extended even further north. So that could be what it's describing over here. Amalei Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Ashi, Atun Mehata Matnitullah. You claim that that's the source for the name of the Yarden. Anan Mehaka Matnitullah. We learn it from here. You know that the Yarden starts up in Dan because Yarden means Yored Midan. So that's how you know that the source of the Yarden is in the Dan. We know it from the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vayikaru lo leleshem Dan, b'shem Dan avihen. They called the Leshem Dan after their forefather, the leader of their Shevet. The area of Dan in the north was previously Leshem. They conquered Leshem and renamed it Dan. From Rabbi Yitzchak, Leshem zo Paimius. And Leshem is synonymous with Paimius or with the Banyas. Betanya, you'd say Yarden, Mimaret Paimius. And that's where the bright that we saw before says that the Yarden source is from the Paimius. So we know the fact that the Yarden starts over there because of these connections. Leshem, which is known as Dan, Leshem is Marat Paimius, and Marat Paimius is the Banyas, which is the source of the Yarden. That's how we know where the Yarden starts, by piecing those pieces of information together. You know it because you say that the word Yarden is an acronym for Yarad Midan. And that's how you know that that's the source or the beginning of the Yarden. Amar Rav Kahana, Zichrutei de Yardino Mimarat Paimius. So Rashi uses the term Zichruta to mean Ikar, the primary source. So the primary source of the Yarden is Marat Paimius, which is the Banyas. Heched Amar, if a person says, Lo Shtatina Mimayim Mimarat Paimius, I won't drink any water, I won't get benefit from any water from Marat Paimius, this cave of Paimius, the Banyas, Itzalei B'kula Yardena. He can't drink water from the entire Yarden, because that's the primary source of the Yarden. And even though there are other sources that enter in, including Chetzbani River, and the Yarmouk, and the Yabok River, that enter into the Yarden, or join with the Yarden, they aren't the major source. The major source is from the Banyas up north. Therefore, if you restrict yourself in the Banyas, you're basically restricting yourself along the entire Yarden, or benefit from the Yarden at all. Zichuta de Dama Kavdo. The major component of the blood is the kaved, is the liver. Kidder of Yitzchak, and that has nafkamina. Damar of Yitzchak, kaved shinimach. If you have a liver that dissolves, mitamei biriviit. It has a din of tumat dam minamet. Tumat dam minamet is mitamei biriviit, even in an ohel. And so when the kaved, the liver, dissolves or liquefies, then it takes on the status of blood, which means that the primary aspect of the dam either comes from the liver, or the liver itself is dam, which we know from having to kasher the liver, that we treat it differently than any other organ. But here, if it's coming from a human being and it dissolves, then it has the status of dam. That means that a revi'it of it will create tumat ol. Zichuta de maya prat. The major source of water in the world is from the prat, from the Euphrates River. Damar of Yudamarav. Hanuder mi mei prat. Asur b'chol mei milk shabolam. First takes a nether not to benefit from the waters of the Euphrates. He may not partake of any of the waters of the world. Hey, chidomi. What exactly did he say? Ilema damar lo shatina mi mei mei de prat. If he says, I'm not going to drink from the waters of the Euphrates, mei pratu de lo shatina. It sounds like, based on Lashon B'nei Adam, that he's restricting himself in Bei Prat, the Euphrates. Ha-min-ha-rach-vino, Shatina. From there, you'd be Medayeg, or you would understand what he meant is, I'm not drinking from the Euphrates, I would drink from other rivers. El Adamar lo shatina mi maim da'atu mi prat. I'm not going to drink from any water that comes out of the Euphrates. If you say it that way, or phrase it that way, then that covers all waters of the world. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, because we have the following statement, Kol ha-Ne'arot, Lamata Mishlosh Ne'arot. All the rivers descend or come from the three rivers. Begimel Narot Lamata Miprat. And the other three rivers descend from the Prat. And the Gemara says, wait a minute. Vaika Enta Demidlan. What about the springs of waters that come out of the mountains? And those are way above the level of the rivers. It's one thing to say that you have descending rivers that they source out of the Prat because they are lower than the Prat. When you speak about Mayanot, you speak about springs that come out of the mountains, how is it the Prat is feeding or sourcing into those Mayanot? They're above it. And we know water doesn't go up. Water only goes down. It doesn't climb mountains. So then, how are these Mayanot sourced out of the Prat? That's exactly what they are. They go underground, and they climb up the Sulam, the ladders of Prat. Or Rashi says it doesn't literally mean Sulam, but it means Olim Barim Kamo Sulam. They go underneath the ground into the mountains, and then they, within the mountains, they're pushed up or forced up those cracks in the mountains that source the Mayanot. So they're also sourced by the Prat. And based on this view of Amir Yudim Rav, the Prat is the major source of all water in the world. And that's based on the Psukim that are found in Breshit by describing Gan Eden. The Nahar Yotzei Mi Eden, there was a river that exited Eden, Mashkot Dagan, that then fed or watered the Gan, Umishami Pared, Vayala Arba Arashim. And from there it subdivides into four heads, or four sources, Shema Achat Pishon, one of those rivers is the Pishon, Usaveh, Goyetz HaKabila, Shem Shamazav, Shavar Tzei Tov, Shem Abdullah, Heaven Hashoam, Shem Anar Sheni Gichon, the second river, Usaveh, Goyetz Kush, Shem Anar Shlishi Chidekel, Hualeh Kidmat Ashur, which is the Tigris River, Banar Revi'i, Hu Prat, and the fourth river is Prat. So this is referring to the four rivers. When it says here, three rivers, it's talking about the Pishon, the Chidekel, and the Gichon, which are all sourced out of the Prat. That's what the Gemara is suggesting over here. The Prat is the major source, and these are all tributaries of the Prat. The only problem is, Vativ Anar HaRivi'i Hu Prat. The fourth river is Prat. Makes it sound like the Prat is a derivative of the Nar that's Yotzei Mi'Eden. It's a river that goes out of Eden, and then it seems to split or have four tributaries, which are the following rivers, including the fourth one, which is the Prat. Well, if the fourth one is the Prat, it makes it sound like it's on par with the other rivers. It's not the source of the other rivers. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, V'itamar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Hu Prat Dimi Ikara. That's the Prat that we mentioned before, which is that the Nahar Yotzei Mi'Eden is the Prat. And the way that the Baal Tosafot describe it is that the Prat is the source. These other rivers, the Chidekel, Gichon, and Pishon, are all tributaries of the Prat, but not that the Prat ends there. The Prat itself continues also in parallel with these other rivers. That's why it says, Ranarivi Prat, because the fourth river is the Prat, meaning with the other three rivers, it also continues to descend. It's larger than the other three rivers, but it also descends with them. It is the Nahar Yotzei Mi'Eden. It's also the river that goes out of Eden. Then it breaks into four pieces, three tributaries, the Gichon, Pishon, and Chidekel, and the Prat itself that continues. And that's what's being described over here. Tosafot actually brings evidence to that fact, and he quotes, Uparshat Shkalim, he said, Rabbi Elezer, HaKalir, B'siluk, Deprat. In the Silukim that they say, the special filot or poems that they used to say on the Arba Parshiyot of Adar, in the Siluk Deprat, it describes the Prat River as being the biggest of the rivers and flowing in parallel to the other rivers after it sources those rivers. And he quotes Rabbi Elezer HaKalir. It's classic of the Baal Tosafot to view Rabbi Elezer HaKalir as being someone of very significant standing with regards to what he wrote. And they will bring evidence from things that he wrote as if it is something that carries weight. One place the Baal Tosafot call him a Tana, Rabbi Elezer HaKalir. Or even if he's not a Tana, they see him as being one of the primary Rishonim and a source of halachot or understandings, even though he's just writing its poetry that's been written, that's said in the liturgy of the Arba Parshiyot and different liturgy during the year. They view Rabbi Elezer HaKalir as carrying a huge amount of weight, and that they do here as well. Now, Tosafot already raises one question here. And then slowly he's going to raise other questions a little later on, which is that the Prat is called the Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat. It's called the big river, the great river. So now the way that we're describing over here is the reason it's called the big river is because it's the source of all the other rivers. And even after the other rivers split off from it, it continues to be the largest of the rivers. So there's physical properties of the Nahar are the Nahar HaGadol. The Midrash brings, when it describes the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and says that the Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat, is that northeastern border of Eretz Yisrael. Over there it says, you know why it's called Nahar HaGadol? Not because it's the biggest, but because it's associated with Eretz Yisrael. And they quote the Eved Melech, Melech, the servant of the king, or those that are in service of the king, are like the king. Because of their closeness to the king, they gain political power, status. And so if you stay close to the king, you'll be called a king too, even though you're only an Eved Lamelech. That's how the Midrash describes the Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat. The reason it's called Gadol is not because it's the biggest, but because it's associated with Eretz Yisrael. That associated with Eretz Yisrael makes it the Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat. If you say that, then it's not speaking about the physical properties. And why does the Midrash do that if the truth is it's just the Nahar HaGadol? It is the biggest river. So Tosafot says, Tzat Kasho, that's a little bit of a question. You could say the Midrash is just playing on the Gadol, but from the Midrash it makes it sound like it's not physically the biggest. It is called the biggest, even though it doesn't display those properties, because it's associated with Eretz Yisrael, which goes against what we're saying over here. Now the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, Yuval Shemo. The name of the Prat is not really Prat, but rather Yuval is the name of the river. Shenemar, Vayak Eitz Shatul Al Mayim. It'll be like a tree that is planted or rooting on a source of water. Val Yuval Yishalach Shoreshav. And then it will send its roots into that water body or to secure it in that water body. And it says, Val Yuval. Yuval is the name of the river or the water body that we're speaking about. And as Rashi notes over here, it is Eitz HaChayim Ishtayikra. That Pasuk in Yirmiyahu is speaking about the Eitz HaChayim because it says, Eitz HaChayim Began Eden. And the Eitz HaChayim, if it's putting its roots into a water source, we just said before that the Nahar Yotzei Mi'Eden, the river that came out of Eden, was Nahar Prat. If that's the case, then Nahar Prat would be the river that the tree of life, Eitz HaChayim, is putting its roots into, and that's called Yuval. So that's the real name of the river is Yuval. So then, V'lamani Krashmo Prat. So then why is it known as the Prat or the Euphrates? Shmeimav Parim Virabim. Because its waters increase, they rise, and therefore it's called the Prat. Because the waters aren't stationary, they don't stay at a single level, they ebb and flow. And they parim v'rabim, they get greater and greater, they gain a certain amount of volume, and that's why it's called the Prat, even though its real name is Yuval. Misayile l'Shmuel, this position of Rabbi Meir, helps what Shmuel says. Damar Shmuel, nara mikipei mibrich. That a river's water is sourced out of its kipei. Tosafot says kipei means misela, from the bedrock, or in essence it means from the mayanot, from the springs and underground water sources that feed the river. That's what causes the river to increase in volume and to rise, which is uplige derav, which is against Rav's position. Da amarav, ame amarav, mitra b'marova, sadarav prat. When it rains heavily in Eretz Yisrael, the indication of that is the swelling Nahar Prat. The swelling Euphrates is an indication of rain in Eretz Yisrael. Now that Tosafot already discussed earlier in the Masechta is somewhat difficult because, first of all, the rains in Eretz Yisrael will not go to the east towards Nahar Prat. There's huge mountains over there and they would move to the west to go out to the Mediterranean. So that's definitely a problem, but it is true that the Nahar Prat is the northeastern border of Eretz Yisrael. So if you look at it that way, then the rains in the northeastern area of Eretz Yisrael will actually would cause swelling of the Euphrates because the Euphrates is passing by that northern end of Eretz Yisrael. And it turns out that the weather patterns, if you live here long enough, you know this, that the weather patterns in Eretz Yisrael all come from that northern side. They come from the north and they slide northeast down towards us. So generally, when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, it rains first in the Golan, and then it rains in the Galil, then goes down to the center of the country, and then into the south. So the weather pattern is flowing southwards. So then, if up north, where the Euphrates passes by that northeastern border of Eretz Yisrael, the rain's there, and it swells, that's a pretty good indication that there's rain in Eretz Yisrael, because the weather patterns flow south from the north. So that would be what's being described here. But you have a fundamental machloket between Shmuel and Rav, which is what causes the water to swell in the rivers. According to Rav, the source of waters that cause the rivers to swell is the rainfall. The more rainfall, the bigger the river gets. And that's the source for the river swelling. The other hand, Shmuel says that the river swells not because of the rain, but because of the mayanot, the springs underneath, increasing their flow. Now, it's obvious that the springs are increasing their flow because of the rain, and it's also obvious that the rain is affecting the river. What Shmuel is saying is it's not just the rain that causes the swelling of the river, but rather the rain causes the mayanot, causes the springs to increase, and therefore that's what creates the volumetric increase in the waters, or the rising swelling waters of the Euphrates. The Rabbeinu Gershom on the other hand says that kipei means migdotav, from its embankments. That's what causes the water to come up. It's not from necessarily the underground springs, but from the banks of the river. That might relate to something we'll see later in Rashi. Just keep it in the back of your mind about this idea of the embankments. So now, here you have a machlok between Shmuel and Rav as to what is the source of the swelling or rising Euphrates. Is it the Mayanot or is it the rain? Now, Dosavo points out that who says that Rabbi Meir is really supportive of Shmuel's position? Shmuel says all rivers in the world get sourced out of the Mayanot. Rabbi Meir says that the waters of the Euphrates are Parim v'Rabim. That's about the Euphrates. That's not about all rivers. So who says that the two of them are speaking about the same thing? So Tosfot says over here, the reason, Einu Ela Mishum Deprat Mitbarech Yoter, Vishu Chashuv Yoter Me'acherim. The reason that he mentioned Prat, Rabbi Meir, is because it is the one that swells the most, and it is the source for all other waters. So he's mentioning Prat, not because he means Prat and nothing else, he's mentioning Prat because it's the most important river. And therefore he mentions it, not to the exclusion of other rivers. Inami, Fishu Rosh the Kulam, Nikra Prat, Hashem Kulam. Or because it's the source of all the other rivers, he's mentioning the Prat as representing all rivers of the world. So that's how Tosfot gets over the problem of why you have to say that Rabbi Meir and Shmuel are really speaking about the same thing. Shmuel is speaking about rivers in general. Rabbi Meir is speaking about the Prat. Tosfot says either he's using the Prat as an example, or he's using the Prat because it's the source for the other rivers. But that means that he believes the same is true of the other rivers, and that's why it's supportive of Shmuel's contention over here. Now, as Tosfot points out, based on this Gemara, if you say that the Euphrates is an indication of rain in Eretz Yisrael, we know that Eretz Yisrael sits west of Bavel, or sits west of the Euphrates River. That means that the flow of the river is west to east, which is that the Prat is starting here in Eretz Yisrael, and then moving eastward into Bavel, and then dropping in down towards Tigris-Euphrates Delta, and by Saudi Arabia, it enters into the sea, the Gulf. That means that you're flowing west to east. The implications of that are that here the Gemara said that the Prat is Yotzei mi-Eden. Prat came out of Eden, went to the Gan, and then exits and feeds the other rivers. That implies that Gan Eden, or where Adam HaRishon was west of Eretz Yisrael, and that the Gan Eden is actually west and not in the east. Right? There's this assumption that it's in the east because it's speaking about the Euphrates rivers, and the Mesopotamian plain was the area, quote-unquote, of Gan Eden. Over here, it seems to indicate otherwise, that it's on the western side. And Tosfot then goes on to show that maybe that makes a lot of sense, because when it speaks about the river that's exiting from the Eden, it's now you'd say, Eden, let's go to the Gan. And the Gan Eden is Mikedem, is to the east of the Eden. And then it goes out to the other rivers. And we see that when Adam HaRishon is thrown out of Gan Eden, he's put to the eastern side of Gan Eden, Mikedem. He's placed east of the garden. And so too Cain, when he's exiled, he's put to the east. That implies that all along, everything else is west of where they are. And so the Tosfot says that's another indication that the Gan and Gan Eden are found west of Eretz Yisrael. And then he speaks about one problem, which is that when the sun rises and the sun sets, it's very red. The Gemara says, why is it when it rises, it's red? It's because it's passing by the Bardei, the Gan Eden. It's passing by the roses or the beauty of Gan Eden. And when it sets, it is passing by the entrance to Gehenom. That's why it's red. The problem with that is that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. That means that it's passing Gan Eden in the east and it's passing Gehenom in the west, which implies that Gan Eden is all the way to the east and not to the west. So Tosafot says, no, you have to understand it this way. When the sun rises, it reflects the color of Gan Eden that's in the west. When it's in the west, it reflects that color, and that's why it's red. When it's setting in the west, it's reflecting the color of the Gehenom, which is in the east. It's just the opposite of what you thought. It's not when it's rising, it's right near there. When it's rising, it's opposite that area, and that's what gives it the color, the red color. And Tosafot says, even if you don't like what I'm saying, you have to say it in the end anyway, because there in the Midrash, it brings the Ipcha, it brings the opposite explanation. So one of the two explanations has to be that way, which is that it's the opposite and not the same side as. And therefore, Tosafot comes to the conclusion that Gan Eden is really found in the west of Eretz Yisrael, and not in the east. Avod and Shmuel, Avid Lu Libnate, Shmuel's father made for his daughters, sounds like Shmuel's sisters, Mikveh Beyomei de Nisan, he made him a mikveh during the periods of Nisan, Umaftzeh and Mats, read Mats, Beyomei de Tishrei, in the time around Tishrei. So at the spring equinox, around that time, he made them a separate mikveh. Around the autumnal equinox, he made them Mats. Beyomei Nisan, Mikveh Beyomei de Nisan, the reason he made them a mikveh in the spring equinox, Summer like Rav. He holds like Rav. Damar Rabbi Yami Amarav. Mitra Bamaroba. When it rains in Eretz Yisrael, Sadaraba Prat. The swelling of the Prat is an indication that it rained in Eretz Yisrael. Or in other words, the waters of rain that came in Eretz Yisrael are going to cause swelling in the Prat. Or in essence, there's rainwater in the Prat. Shema Yirbu Nothfim Ala Zochalim. Because the problem is, maybe the dripping will be greater than the flowing. Nothfim is a reference to rain. Zochalim is a reference to flowing from Mayanot, from spring waters. In the Torah, there are two ways to become Tohor. The way to become Tohor is through a mikveh, or there's a way to become Tohor, which is through a Mei Mayan. It's through a spring. The difference between them is how you go about becoming Tohor. A mikveh or rainwater has to be Ashboren, has to be a collection or a pool of water. It can't be moving water. And it has to be water that's contained in a single location that neither a banana at least has to be 40 sa'ah, depending on what you're putting in there, but it has to be gathered or standing water. On the other hand, the mayan, the spring waters, can be meter through zochalim when they are flowing, and even bekoshu, even any amount of them can be meter. And the Rabbeinu Tam goes out of his way to show that by mei mayan, they can also be meter through ashboren. Meaning that for Mei Mayan, they can be Mitayar, both flowing, and if they are stationary or collected in a single location. Whereas a Mikveh can only be Mitayar Bashboren, it cannot be Mitayar Bezochalin. The problem that you have here is that you have now the River of Prat. The source of the River of Prat are Mayanot, are springs. But when it rains during the rainy season, then the waters of the Prat swell, and now there's a lot of rainwater added to the spring water that's in the Prat. And what he's afraid of is, Vavalog Megashamim Ruba, that the Notfim, the rainwaters will exceed the Zochalim, the flowing waters of the Mayanot, and then the Geshem, the rain, will be the Roth. And that become problematic for them to go to the Mikveh over there. Rashi over here brings two issues about why the Zochalim are a problem. The first of which he says is, he used to make them a separate Mikveh from a Mayan. He did not allow them to go in the mikveh in the river. Rather, they went to a separate mayan because the naharot, the rivers at that time, had too much rainwater in it. And therefore, he wanted them to be in a, not a mikveh, but rather in a mayan. The reason for that is that certain tumult require mayan, including a zav. A zav requires mei mayan in order to become tohor. It's not enough to go to a mikveh. Rashi says over here, the same is true of a zavah, which is a woman who has an extended blood emission, where she turns from a nida into a zava gedola. And Rashi claims, based on his Rebbeim, that a zava has the same requirement as a zav for a mayan or for a spring water. And Shmuel, because the women of Israel have a safek, whether they're a nidar, safek a zava, that's why we keep the shiva nikiyim, that's why we keep nida the way we do today. So that makes them a safek zavot. And so therefore Shmuel wanted them to go to the mikveh, not just a regular mikveh, he wanted them to go into a mayan. And so in the springtime, the waters of the Prat were heavily laden with rainwater, which does not qualify for Mei Mayan. And so if they were to go to the mikveh in those waters, they would not be in Mei Mayan, they'd be in Mei Gishamim. And so therefore he created a separate mikveh for them of Mayim Chayim. That's how Rashi describes it over here. You can see already in the Masorah Shas, he says, go look carefully at Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbat, because in Shabbat, Rashi quotes this as being the explanation of his Rebbeim. And he over there criticizes that and says it's just not true, because he says that a Zava does not require Mayim Chayim. Only a Zav does. The Torah only specifies that a Zav requires Mayim Chayim. Nowhere does the Torah specify that a Zava requires Mayim Chayim. Therefore, Rashi over there gives a different explanation, which is based on what we're saying here, that a mikveh requires hashbonin, requires the water to be stationary and collected, whereas mayan can be flowing water. So the rest of the year, seemingly, it's not clear how much of the year it was like this, when the waters of the Prat were from mayanot, then when their daughters went into the mikveh in there, they were tahor because the waters are flowing. But it's Mei Mayan, and Mei Mayan are Mitaher, even Zochalim, even when they are flowing. On the other hand, when the rainwaters started to increase or swell the Euphrates, the majority of the water, possibly in the Euphrates at that time, was rainwater. Rainwater can only be Mitaher in a mikveh, in Ashborin, in an area of collection. It can't be Mitaher when it's flowing. Problem is, they're going to a river that's flowing. So now you're trying to be Mitaher yourself with rainwater in a river that's flowing. It doesn't work. You need to gather the water together. That's what Shmuel did. Shmuel created an outlet from the river that collected the water and made it into an ashboren. And that way they could go to the mikveh, not in the river, but in an area that had collected water. So that's Rashi's explanation in the Gemara in Shabbat when he rejects what he brings here in the name of his Rebbeim. Now, in terms of why they're called Zochalim, either the difference between Zochalim and Notfim is the difference between the waters that are from Amayan and the waters that come from rain. Or Rashi over here brings a second Lashon that the word Zochalin are rain waters that float into the river. Mishnayot and Mikvot speak about Mayim Shuvim. You're not allowed to draw water and then pour it into the mikveh. Then if you draw water and then you do what's called Hamshacha, you pour it into a pipe that's Mechuber the Karka and then flows into the mikveh, that's not Pusel the mikveh. So Rashi says the same thing over here. Zochalin could be a description of rainwater that did not fall directly into the river, but fell in the land and then flowed into the river. Versus Notfim, which is rainwater that drops directly into the river. That might be the difference between the Zochalin and the Notfim that we're noting over here. That's Rashi's explanation of what he did over here in terms of the mikveh, is that the problem is you have flowing water. Flowing water is only mitaher when it is a mayan, not when it's rainwater. So in the Yomei Nisan, when the waters are heavy laden with rain waters, because it's the end of the rainy season, then the rain waters could be the majority, and then you can't be mitaher yourself while it's flowing. Nisan's the end of the rainy season, and because in that period of Nisan is when all the rain is accumulated in the river, that makes it now that the river has possibly a majority of rainwater, and rainwater cannot be mitaher while it's flowing. So he created them a separate mikveh of non-flowing water as Boren, which, okay, the way Balei Tosafot and Rabbeinu Tam say is Mimonav Shach works. Because if it's rainwater is the majority, then you need an Ashborin. You need its water to be collected in a single location. If the majority of the water is Mayan water, then still Ashborin works by Mayan. And so you, even if you collected the waters from the Mayan or the Mayan stopped, it still makes it that the Ashborin works. That collected water works. And therefore that's what the Abu the Shmuel did for his daughters. Then B'yomei de Tishrei, he put down Matzeh, put down these reed mats. Rashi says because in the Tishrei time, the water is low and there's a lot of mud or silt at the bottom of the river. And if they go into the river, it might stick to their feet or their legs and cause there to be a chatzitza. So in order to prevent them having sinking into the mud there, he put down the mats so they wouldn't have a hefsek, they wouldn't have a chatzitza. That's Rashi's explanation. The Rabbeinu Tam brings an alternate explanation. It's both of these explanations are based on the context of where this is found in the Tosefta. Rashi says that it has to do with Hefsek or Chatzitza. Over there, in that same area, in the Tosefta, it also mentions that one woman should not go into the mikveh in a namal, in the port. The other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam says, well, they're there together because they have the same reason. And the reason, or the problem is, that since the waters are not deep, and it's not easy to enter the water, there's a lack of tzniut. And the daughters who are going into the mikveh are going to try to go in quickly and get out quickly because they don't have privacy. So what Abu Adishmol did was he put up machatalot, not on the floor, but around. And by doing that, he gave them privacy. By giving them privacy, they'll go to the mikveh in a ragua fashion, in a calm fashion, and they'll do it properly, and they'll get to the right depths of the water. And that's what the mechitzot were for, these matzeh were for. And similarly, the Rabbeinu Tam says that's what was going on in the port. The problem with the namal is that there are people around there all the time. There's no privacy. If you put up matzeh there also, you create privacy, then you can go to the mikveh in the port. If you don't have any privacy in the port, then the mikveh is problematic because the woman's going to try to race in and out in order not to be seen. And if that's the case, then she's not going to go to the mikveh properly. So that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says the purpose of the matzeh were. The Rambam, in one place, brings the purpose of the matzeh were actually to create an ashboret. That the matzeh created an area that segregated the water and made it into an ashboret. That's another possibility, although in Tishrei that's less necessary because the water in the Tishrei time is when the main source of the water, and maybe the only source of the water, is the Mayanot, because of the fact that the rainy season has been long over, and through the whole dry season, there's no rainwater or melting snow that's left in the river. All the river's coming from is the Mayan. So over there, you wouldn't need an Ashboren, so it'd be strange that that would be the necessity for the Matzeh. Upliga dididay adiday. Now over here, Rashi brings two interpretations of this being a stira. The first explanation is that it is a stira with Shmuel himself. Because Damar Shmuel, Ein Mayim Nitarim B'Zochalim, El Prat B'Yomei D'Tishrei. The waters are only Mitaher flowing in the Prat during the time period of Tishrei. Which means that he says that when do flowing waters of the Prat work to be Mitaher you, is when there is no rainwater inside of the Prat. That's when it works B'Zochalim. When there's rainwater in there, then it's going to be a problem. That implies the reason that Euphrates swells is because of rainwater. That's similar to what Rav said before, that the swelling of the Euphrates comes from the rain, not mikipei mavrich. Not like what Shmuel said, that it comes from the mayanot, increasing their flow. That's what causes the swelling of the river. Here Shmuel himself makes it sound like the source is the rain and not the mayanot. Because according to him, if it mikipei mavrich, if it comes out of the cellar, the mayanot, or from the gedotav, the edges of the river, then it shouldn't be a problem at all year round. It should always be flowing water and it should be fine. The rainwater should make no difference. So here you see that Shmuel believes that there is rainwater impacting the swelling, and therefore only when Tishrei, when there's no rain for a long time, is the river considered to be pure Mayan river, and that's why you can go to the mikveh in flowing water in the river during that period of time. But that's a stira in Shmuel's position. Lishna Achrina Rashi brings Ha Davu de Shmuel. That which Abu de Shmuel did is Pliga de Shmuel, argues on what Shmuel says. Because Shmuel says over here that you can only use the Prat as a mikveh during Tishrei, whereas according to Abu de Shmuel, you could use it all year round except for Nisan. The only time he made a separate mikveh for his daughters was in the arid time period of Nisan or the rainy season. The rest of the year, he let them go to the mikveh in the river. Shmuel says the only time you go in the river is Yom Tishrei, at the autumnal equinox, when the rain is diminished completely, that's when you can go. And that's what the stira is between them, is that Avodah Shmuel allows it all year round except for Nisan, and Shmuel allows it, doesn't allow it all year round except for Tishrei. So they actually have almost opposing opinions there, and that's what it means, Pligei Didideh Adideh. It's not him on himself, but Pligi Ad Avua, meaning that he's arguing on his father and Shmuel have a disagreement on this point. So that would be the stira according to Rashi. The truth is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a stira, because this goes back to what we said before, that Shmuel said all rivers have this feature. And now he's speaking about Nahar Prat. So who says that Nahar Prat and other rivers have the same rules? So he's here speaking about Nahar Prat. Over there he's speaking about rainwater. It's clear that the Gemara conflates the two because it brought a proof to Shmuel from Rabbi Meir who was speaking about the Prat. So that makes it either sound like Shmuel speaking about the Prat all along, for his stream at all rivers all along, and that's what the Balei Tosfot said. They only use Prat as an example, or Prat as the source of the other rivers, and therefore it's true of all rivers, and that's why it would be a stira in Shmuel's position. But what you see from here is, you have three Amoraim quasi Tanaim with the same opinion. That is Abu the Shmuel, Rav, and Shmuel. Shmuel here in the end who says that rainwaters increase the volume, the swelling of the river. Abu the Shmuel believes the same thing, maybe it, how much is the question between them, but they both agree to that point. And Rav himself explicitly says that the rivers swell from the rainwater. That means you have three individuals. Abu the Shmuel, who is a borderline Tana Amora. Rav is a borderline Tana Amora, and Shmuel is a first generation Amora. All saying that the rivers source their swelling from their rain. That would seemingly give you a strong indication that the Psak is that way. Yet, in the bottom Tosafot on the top here, he says, Perish Rabbeinu Tam Mitshuva, Tavagav the Shmuel, Rav the Shmuel, and Rav all believe that the Matar, that the Kaimi Bechadashitata, they all believe the same thing. Lo Kaimelonochi. We don't pass them like that. We pass like the other view of that a river swells from its kipei. We said one of two possibilities. Either mikepei means mayanot, or from its gedeluta, from the sides. I noted you before, I remember that Rashi says that the difference between zochalim and notfim is that zochalim is rainwater that flows into the river from the side, and notfim is rainwater that goes directly in. So that might stim. That might fit well with the Rabbeinu Gershom's explanation that migdelta, from the sides it swells, because that means that it's not rainwater, it's classified as meimayan, and it's not problematic. But here, Rabbeinu Tam says, despite the fact that you have three people with the same shita, we still nevertheless follow this shita of Shmuel, that kipei mavrich, and not to deny the fact that it's the rain that causes the swelling, because even when the Mayanot increase, they increase because of rain. When it rains, it's clear that the river swells. And even if you say it's coming from the Mayanot are also sourced from the rain. But that is because the rain then goes underground, and then that rain that collects underground, or this melting snow that goes underground, creates the Mayanot. And that's what sources the Mayanot. So we're not denying the fact that there's a connection to the rain. We're just saying that that rain is not what's directly causing the swelling. It's indirectly causing the swelling from the fact that it increases the flow of the Mayanot. And that increased flow of the Mayanot makes it that the waters of the river always remain or have a status of Mayan and don't have a status of Gishamim. Then Tosafot brings numerous questions on that Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam. And each one of them he tries to answer or figure out why it's not a problem for the Rabbeinu Tam. So at first, the Rabbeinu Tam speculates that the reason that we don't worry about rainwaters in the rivers of Eretz Yisrael is because Eretz Yisrael is so high that all the rainwater runs off, and therefore it doesn't create problems for the rivers in Eretz Yisrael. And then he brings an additional position of the Rabbeinu Tam, Oh, Perish Rabbeinu Tam, the Eagle of Meir, I mean, a din, kama, kama, botil. That as the rainwater goes in, it is batel. So as it flows into the rivers, it's batel because each drop that goes in is batel. And then each subsequent drop is batel, like we say, kama kama batel. I feel it's very Rav, Avu the Shmuel. So even according to Rav and Avu the Shmuel, then they agree that the rainwater that goes in there doesn't really affect it. And the reason they assert it is not because it's really asur, because of Marit Ayin, it looks like that you're going into rainwater, not going into a mayan. He says, according to that explanation, then all those questions we just brought from Moshe Rabbeinu about what was the source of the water would not be a question on this position of Rabbeinu Tam, because he says that that was all Maradayim. And Moshe's time and all those situations were prior to the Gzeirah. He says, in addition, it makes sense to say that they're batel berov, the rainwaters, because all the rivers are connected to Yama Gadol. If they're connected to Yama Gadol, then the rainwater is batel to the Yama Gadol. And then Tosva goes on to say that we already described in Chulin and also early in Masechta, the kama kama batel only works up to a certain amount. After it reaches a certain threshold, it's chozer meneor. It reawakens. So he says that explanation of the Beinu Tam doesn't make so much sense, because once it's rained enough and the rain has reached an excessive point, then we say it's not kama kama batel, it reawakens, and now it's a problem because it comes the robe and it would ruin the river. So that's why the Bayit Tosafot don't love that explanation and favor either the Rebbeinu Tam's original explanation or that all Na'arot are connected to Yama Gadol, and therefore the rainwaters would be Batel. So now, the Gemara continues with their Mishnah. Halokeach, Oshen Eitan Lama Matana. Someone who purchases an animal, or is gifted an animal, Patur Mi Maaser Beima. There's no requirement of Maaser Beima. Mar says, Minahane Mile. Where do you know that from? Amar Rav Kana, Damakra, the Pasuk says, Mile Yatcha V'dimachalo Ta'acher, B'chor Banecha Titen Li, Kein Ta'ase L'shorcha L'tzonecha. You should do the same thing for your shore and for your tzon. Just like your children don't get bought and don't get gifted, they're born to you. That's why so too the tzon abakar ain't a belakuach umatana. Then achayve maser when it is a gift or it is a purchase. It says, that's a nice proof, but hi be b'chor k'tiv. That post was written by b'chor, not written by Maaser Beima. Says, ma'amar kra, ta'aseh. It says that you should do. Im enu inyan le'b'chor, t'lo ita b'asiya. It uses the word asiya where there it seems to mean that you're doing something actively in order for this to happen. That's only true when you're speaking about Maaser, not about a b'chor. B'chor doesn't require any asiya, demi rechem kadosh. It's automatically kadosh at the point of birth. Therefore, since it's not useful or not relevant by Bechor, we don't need it for Bechor, therefore we're going to use it for Maaser Beima. And even though the Gemara here says that the Asiya makes the referencing to Maaser Beima and not Bechor, the Baal Yitzhak Zavod still say that you ain't mikra, you'd say me dey shuto. And therefore the case that it's definitely speaking about is a Bechor as well. That has implications for Limudim in other places. As well as the fact that the Asiya over here, or whatever we're including, we're going to try to include something that is the most similar to a Bechor. And Bechor, Maaser, and Pesach are grouped together as a single entity. Therefore, it makes a lot of sense to include Maaser Beima here as the Asiya that is associated with Bechor. Beima, Tzneu, Linyan, Chataot, Ula, Asham. Why don't you say we can use it for Chataot and Asham? To tell us that a Chatat and Asham that are brought can't be brought for something that's purchased or something that's a gift. They have to be from your own flock. So you see here, the Kain Taseh, first of all, puts us to something that requires Asiya, which means something that requires Hekdesh, whereas Bechor doesn't require Hekdesh because it's Kadosh Mirechem. So we said that must be speaking about Maaser Beima. Where it says, maybe it's speaking about Chatot Va'ashamot. Domia de Banecha. It says, Bechor Banecha Titanli. It has to be similar to Banecha. Ma Banecha She'ein Baal Achet. Just like your children are born naturally, they don't come because of a sin. They're not coming for a sin. Chadot vashamot are brought on sins, and therefore they can't be what the pasuk is speaking about. So let's say it's talking about olah shlamim. They don't come for a sin. Maybe that's what it's referencing to in the pasuk, that those can't come from something that's purchased or something that's gifted. Dumi debanecha. Once again, that's to be similar to your child. Ma benecha shenu ba beneder nidava. It's like a child's not brought as part of a neder and dava, but rather through birth. Abzonecha v'shorecha. Same thing with zonecha shorecha. It has to be something that comes not because you generated it through a neder and a dava, but rather it comes as a chova, just like a bechor does. So the Gemara says, okay, ve'motzneu inyan olat ri'iya. So maybe it should be for an olat ri'iya, which, again, doesn't come as a neder and a dava. It comes as a chova, but also doesn't come on a chet. The Gemara says again, dum yudah banecha. Ba'banecha shein kabul azman. Just like banecha, whenever it's born, and that's when it's kadosh. Av shorcha betzonecha shein kabul azman. So too, the animal's ear is something that isn't fixed in time. Whereas olat riyah is a very fixed time. It's on the regular when you go up. Lo yira ufanai rikam. That's a fixed time where that chuvah takes place. So it says, all right. Ima banecha eno v'lakuach klal. Maybe banecha you can't purchase at all. Therefore, if you purchase them, it wouldn't work at all. There would be no Maaser Beima, which is exactly what we said in the Mishnah. Something that's purchased cannot be Maaser Beima. So why is that a problem? Because Alama, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, problems you have this memra from Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lakach Hasara Ubrim B'meiman, he purchased 10 fetuses while they're still in their mother's womb. Kulam Nechnasim Nadir Le'itaser. They all are subject to Maaser Beima, because there, you purchase them pre their birth, And therefore, you are considered to be the owner of them when they are born. So why is it that that's the case? By Bencha, it doesn't matter when it happens. The birth creates the Kedusha, and there's no purchase ever of Banecha. Here, there is a time when a purchase makes a difference. So Amarav Amakra, Taseh, Shatasiya, Mieta Katuv. When is Lakuach excluded? At the time of Asiya, at the time when you're going to be Ra'oi for Maser. So when you are Ra'oi the Maser, at that point it can't be purchased. Over here, you're purchasing them before they're Ra'oi for Maser. That's because when they're in utero, they're not subject to Maser Be'ema. The truth is, the Bali Tosafot say they're not even subject to Maser Be'ema for their first 7 days, which is a Mechusar Zman. It's a Machloket. We have a Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, who believes that even in those 7 days, you can put them into corral, even though they can't be brought as a korban yet, but Mechusar Zman enters into the corral. According to the Chachamim, that Mechusar Zman doesn't enter into the corral until you reach the 8th day of the animal's life. It's considered to be pre-Asiya. Since that's pre-Asiya, when you purchase it, then it's not a disqualifying event. But Tosafot says, when it says you bought them while they were in utero, lav dafka. You could have bought them even after they're born, as long as it's in the first 7 days of their life. If you bought them then, it has no impact on the animal, and you're still chayav in Maaser Be'ema. Because when it came to the moment when you're chayav in Maaser Be'ema, which is on the 8th day, it was already yours. And then it wasn't purchased, and that's why you'd be chayav in Maaser Be'ema. So Tosafot says, either you have to say it's lav dafka in Rabbi Asi Yom Rabbi Yochanan, or this is the feast, Shita Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda, that even when it's Mechusar Zman, it's still Ra'oi for the corral. If that's the case, then the cutoff is birth, and not the first 7 days, and that's why the specifically over here says we're speaking about a fetus in utero that you purchased, that's not subject to Maaser Be'ema. Tosafot also over here points out that this is an interesting limud, because we're learning something from E-Efshar to Efshar. The reason by Banecha, Lakuach and Matana are not relevant is because it's impossible. It's not relevant at all. And we have many places in Shas where the Gemara says you can't learn Efshar, meaning E-Efshar. You can't learn something that's possible from something that is impossible. So why over here is the Gemara allowing that to happen? So Tosafot says, when we say that Efshar can't be learned from E-Efshar, is when the Hekesh is needed for other Limudim. And therefore, since the Hekesh is needed for other Limudim, there you can't say the reason that Hekesh was written was to learn from one to the other when it's something impossible in one, impossible in the other. Because there, you're not compelled to say that. In places where the Hekesh has no meaning outside of the fact that we're learning this piece of information, over there you can say, Al Korchan Ekishana Katuv, that the Pasuk compels you to say that because that's the reason there is a Hekesh over there. Linya, to teach you, Efshar Mi Efshar. So Tosafot says, in this case, there's no necessity for the Hekesh outside of this limud, since this limud is the sole derivative of the Hekesh, then you can learn from E-Efshar to Efshar, because otherwise, what was the purpose of the Hekesh? But if there is an alternate purpose for the Hekesh, then we would not invoke it with regards to matters that are coming from E-Efshar to Efshar. Okay, we're going to stop here about halfway down, Nun Vav, Amud Aleph.